The nation's unemployment rate fell slightly in March to 8.8%. More than 200,000 jobs were added to the payroll. But as NPR's Zoe Chace reports, there are a lot of people who weren't counted in the unemployment picture, and they're being shut out of the economic recovery.
Economist Bill Rogers has a name for this recovery, and it's not a very nice one.
The horrible recession combined with this weak recovery has led to this bifurcated set of outcomes.
The bifurcated recovery. That's what this story is about, where people who do have college degrees get hired and people who don't are sitting on the sidelines.
When in doubt, let's just plot this.
I'm looking at a graph labor economist Heidi Shierholz just pulled up in her office at the Economic Policy Institute. It's a Washington think tank. She's not a big fan of the media hype around the release of the unemployment rate every month because she feels like it doesn't tell the whole story.
If the unemployment rate is improving, that's really only good news if we see a bigger share of the labor force that's working.
The unemployment rate leaves out a lot of people, people who have stopped looking for jobs. In economist speak, they've dropped out of the labor force.
So when people who may have otherwise been unemployed drop out of the labor force, that makes the unemployment rate look better.
People out there like Valerie Young.
It's been almost 3 years now and I haven't found anything.
So she stopped looking. Young has four kids and a husband who's on disability. They live just outside Salt Lake City. Young left college early to get married and raise a family. When her husband got sick, she had to jump into the workforce quick. Except,
even though I have put in hundreds of applications and dozens of resumes, I've been told by a lot of employers in interviews that they are looking for someone with more education with a college degree.
So she's taken out a loan to go back to college. She starts next week. People like Young who don't have college degrees have dropped out of the labor force in a larger proportion than people who do have college degrees. Sean Smith wants to go back to college too. He's moved to three states in as many years looking for work. Nothing stuck. In the 90s, he was making such good money doing landscaping, he dropped out of school to work full time. Now he lives with his parents in Largo, Florida.
Being 31 years old, wanting to go back to school, you know, just because you want to stop and do that doesn't mean that life's going to stop. You know, your bills are still going to come in. So it would have to be something. Ugh, clocks.
Is that like one of your parents' old clocks or something?
My mom got it for 25 years with her company. And so that she hung it up.
Do you think you'll ever get a clock like that?
I would like to think I could, but I don't think that's something that will happen.
Before the recession in 2007, people who had some college but didn't have a bachelor's, about 70% of them were working. When the recession hit, that number dropped to about 65%, and it keeps dropping. Economist Heidi Shierholz picks it up from here.
And when jobs do become available, when there are literally millions of very desperate people out there, workers with higher education credentials can sort of go down the ladder. They can take jobs that are below their skills and experience, and workers with lower education credentials can fall off the bottom.
If you can't even get on the ladder, how will you start to climb it? Zoe Chace, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. The U.S. economic recovery is finally showing up where it matters most, in the nation's job market. Employers added more than 200,000 workers to their payrolls last month. The unemployment rate fell to its lowest level in 2 years. Job gains are welcome news for President Barack Obama, whose re-election hopes may hinge on how the economy fares in the next year and a half. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
President Obama was visiting a UPS facility outside Washington yesterday when he paused to announce a special delivery from the Labor Department.
Today we learned that we added 230,000 private sector jobs last month. And that's good news.
Mr. Obama joked that an improving economy would mean more packages for those brown UPS delivery trucks to haul around. Business in general seemed to welcome the encouraging jobs report. As always, though, the president's celebration was tempered by the knowledge of how many jobs were lost during the economic downturn.
Everybody here knows we've got a lot of more work to do. There are still millions of Americans out there that are looking for a job that pays the bills.
That's part of the political challenge for the president, drawing attention to the improvements in the economy without appearing callous to those who are still out of work. The unemployment rate inched down in March to 8.8%. White House Economic Advisor Austin Goolsbee notes that's a full percentage point lower than November's jobless rate.
That is, I believe, the biggest four-month drop in 27 years, which is good progress. But if the unemployment rate's still 8.8%, you got a long way to go.
The job gains in March came in many different industries, including manufacturing, mining, healthcare, and professional services. January and February's jobs numbers were also revised upwards. Goolsbee says private employers have now added 1.8 million jobs over the last 13 months.
You know, you never want to make too much out of any 1 month's report, but when you get 3, 4, 5 months, now 13 months in a row of private sector job growth, it's telling you something.
One sector that's not adding jobs is government. Cash-strapped state and local governments continue to lay off thousands of workers. And for the most part, construction firms are not hiring either. Housing construction has often been one of the first industries to recover from a recession, but not this time, with home prices still falling in much of the country and vacant foreclosures continuing to weigh on the market. That may help to explain why so far the improvements in the job market have not shown up in Mr. Obama's approval ratings. According to a new Gallup poll, just 39% of Americans approve of the way Mr. Obama is handling the economy. Gallup's Frank Newport says that number has barely budged in the last year.
For the jobs numbers to be translated into political capital, I think people have to perceive the economy's getting better themselves, not just the raw numbers from the government, but their attitudes, their perceptions. And on that front, we're not seeing any change in economic confidence. It's down. So until that moves, all the economic data in the world probably isn't going to have much effect on Obama.
Economists will continue to keep a close eye on Japan and the Middle East for signs that supply shortages or rising oil prices could derail the U.S. recovery. So far, though, the economy seems to be withstanding these foreign headwinds. Yesterday, the president warned of another threat closer to home. If Congress fails to agree on a spending plan next week, and the government is forced to shut down.
Given the encouraging news we received today on jobs, it would be the height of irresponsibility to halt our economic momentum because of the same old Washington politics. That's not what we need.
The administration argues there's no reason lawmakers can't strike a budget deal so long as everyone's willing to give a little. Scott Horsley, NPR News, the White House.
Democrats and Republicans have until just a little under a week, Friday, April 8th, to reach an agreement on funding the federal government through the rest of the fiscal year, or it will shut down. Of course, the federal government has already been operating under a series of stopgap funding measures, continuing resolutions as they're called, for the past 6 months. We're joined now by Dr. Tom Coburn, senator from Oklahoma. He was one of the Republican members of President Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission. Senator Coburn joins us from his office in Washington, D.C. Senator, thanks so much for being with us.
Scott, it's great to be with you.
Vice President Biden says that on that side of the aisle, they've come up with $33 billion worth of cuts in this year's budget. And there's, to state the obvious, $30 billion worth of difference between that figure and the $61 billion that was approved by the House last month.
Well, you've already cut $10 billion, essentially, in what the two pieces that have been passed in the continuous resolution. So if you were to take the original House bill and take the $10 billion, you'd have to cut 51. And if they're talking about 33, that's 18 difference. My position would take it and let's get on to solving the other bigger problems that we have.
Like what?
We are in a downward spiral in terms of our obligations and our cash flow. Our debt is sinking our nation. And if we're going to be creating jobs, then we have to send a signal to the world financial community that we are serious about our problems. Otherwise, our interest rates are going to go through the roof.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of signal would be sent by significantly cutting the federal budget.
Yeah, and not just in discretionary. We can't take all of this from a small portion of the discretionary. We have unsustainable Social Security, unsustainable Medicaid, unsustainable Medicare, unsustainable Defense Department. We have to be about relooking at the whole role of government. The question is with what speed, and can we buy enough time to fix our problems? Otherwise, people are not going to loan us money. The interest rates are going to become like Greece and some of the others. And then we're going to have to make much more severe cuts. Our country is facing some pain. And the question is do we do this in a way to where we protect our most precious assets, our people, and do it in a way that everybody has to participate? Or do we wait until we have to, and then we hurt everybody a great deal more?
Reading between the lines, it sounds, Senator, as if you think you can reach an agreement over the next week.
Well, my hope is, as a physician, what you don't want to do is treat symptoms. You want to treat real disease. And when you treat symptoms, all you do is cover up the disease. And so if we allow real politics, the next election cycle, to cover up what the real disease is, we would have done a very big disservice to the American people. And so that's why I voted for the deficit commission. There's a lot of stuff in there I didn't like. But the realization is everybody has to give. And if we don't do that, we will have betrayed the people that sent us up here.
Let me ask you about a debate that was brought to my attention this week. You're Oklahoma, I think, can fairly be identified as a farming state. You're opposed to ethanol subsidies.
Well, I'm specifically opposed to the ethanol blending credit. Mm-hmm. Which is just one of the subsidies that we give for ethanol.
This has opened up, as I don't have to tell you, a point of disagreement with Grover Norquist and his group, Americans for Tax Reform.
I'm not sure that they add anything positive to the debate today, being dogmatic in their position that if you don't give the most profitable companies in this country, who, by the way, have sent me a letter saying they don't want this money, that we're going to send them $5.9 billion, and to call that a tax increase by not sending them money that they're not earning, to me seems ridiculous, and the average American's going to look at that and say, that's stupid.
Now, this gets fairly intricate, but we're talking about the 45-cent per gallon ethanol tax credit.
For blending.
Yeah, for blending ethanol, which I think is difficult to understand, but I think the argument that Mr. Norquist and others are making is this represents a tax increase.
He's saying it's a tax increase. If we take away this, which they don't agree with the blending credit either, but if we don't cut somebody's taxes somewhere else, I am a heretic, and I no longer am a conservative Republican who believes in limited government.
And as far as you're concerned, there—
I think it's background noise, and it doesn't play for what the real problems are in front of us.
Senator Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma. Thanks so much, Senator.
Scott, good to be with you.
Positive news on the jobs front this weekend. The U.S. Labor Department says the economy added 216,000 jobs in March, and the unemployment rate dropped to 8.8%. But there's some caveats. There's still more than 6 million Americans who are classified as long-term unemployed, those who've been looking for work for 27 weeks or longer. And it's not just more experienced workers who are having a hard time finding employment. As NPR's Siri Grassley reports, it's a tough job market for young people, too.
Madison Cox dreamed of a great life as a hairstylist.
I thought, I'm going to find this really nice salon and, I'm going to be able to buy a new car and all this kind of stuff. And that is totally not what happens.
She hit roadblocks almost immediately after graduating from cosmetology school last year. The first obstacle was an apprenticeship. Most salons require stylists to do one before they'll hire them. But Cox had a hard time finding one that worked for her. Most are full-time, and they don't pay. But Cox is 24 and a single mom. She had her son Sam when she was 16 and says she can't afford to work for free.
A lot of people who don't have kiddos, that's okay for them and they have the time to do that, but I have to be very selective.
Cox eventually landed a paid apprenticeship, but couldn't keep up with the partying lifestyle of her coworkers. So she's been unemployed since October. She makes some money doing hair out of her house in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but says it's scary not having a consistent income. Cox is just one of the thousands of young people without a job. The unemployment rate is 23% for people like her who just have a high school diploma. That's over 2.5 times what it is for the general population. Cox knows that without her son, things might be easier. She'd be able to crash on couches or get a roommate. But now her routine has to center around Sam. She says it's important that he doesn't see her struggle.
It's all about your game face. I think a lot of it is I pretend like everything is okay.
Looking back, Cox admits she was naive.
I think I aimed too high, and my expectations were unrealistic. It's disappointing, you know, knowing that all these dreams that I had were kind of silly.
Still, she hasn't given up on the dream yet, and thinks she may have found a way around the apprenticeship problem. Cox hopes she can skip one by becoming a cosmetology instructor. But for many people her age, even a college degree isn't a guarantee. According to the National Association of Colleges and Employers, recent grads entered one of the grimmest job markets for young people in years. In 2007, over half of students had jobs at graduation. Last year, only a quarter of them did. Mandy Jacobs was smart enough to know that her bachelor's degree in sociology wasn't going to bring in the big bucks, so she went back to school. But not grad school, community college.
I did get a few odd looks.
Jacobs is 26 now, and 2 years ago, she thought her ticket was healthcare. Everyone and everything said it would be in high demand as the baby boomers aged. So she got an associate's degree in radiation therapy from a school in Indiana. By graduation, she had defined skills and hours of on-the-job experience.
I thought I was great on paper. I thought I was good to go.
She applied all over the country, but could hardly land an interview. When a few of her classmates got jobs, she was puzzled.
I'm happy for them. I'm glad they got jobs because we all deserve one. But it was a little twinge of jealousy.
Jacob's bad luck may be the result of a simple supply and demand problem. While she was in training, the need for radiation therapists plummeted. Since graduation, Jacobs has been getting by with two part-time jobs. But she finally got some good news. Jacobs' boss told her one of those jobs in radiation safety will turn full-time in the summer. She's disappointed she won't get to work with patients, and it's not exactly the future she expected. But it's one she's happy with for now. Siri Grassley, NPR News.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.